If Christ is king, how should the Christian consider the kingdoms of this world? What does the Bible teach us about human authority and what it means to love our neighbors and our enemies? Before we render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, let's know what it means to render unto God what is God's. This is the Biblical Anarchy Podcast, the modern prophetic voice against war and empire.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Biblical Anarchy Podcast, a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute and part of the Christians for Liberty Network. This week and every week on Biblical Anarchy, we seek to live counterculture to the empire of man and to instead seek the kingdom of God by unpacking what the Bible teaches about government, authority, and human relationships. I am your host, Jacob Winograd. So for today's episode, I'm going to play a segment from a recent live stream I did with Kyle Matovic. Kyle Matovic is the host of the podcast In Liberty and Health, and he also does a few other podcasts on the site as well as being the lead guitarist for the band A Common Crown. So you should definitely check out Kyle's work and his music as well. But I had invited Kyle on, and we kind of did an impromptu live stream reaction to a episode of Andrew Klavan's podcast, Andrew Klavan being a host on The Daily Wire. And he's one of the few from The Daily Wire who have actually provided some commentary to the departure of Candace Owens. Now, why am I talking about this? Why do we care about this? Candace Owens is one of the few in the more mainstream media, although The Daily Wire is not exactly mainstream. If you know, some people would say like Fox and CNN, they're mainstream, they're the corporate media, but The Daily Wire is like the biggest media outlet in conservative media. And, you know, definitely in modern terms is something that I would say kind of fits the sort of new landscape of what is mainstream opinion in terms of what is on the right. And Candace was someone who, although not in the same camp that I would put myself in terms of being a libertarian, she is a fellow Christian, and she was coming to conclusions on very important topics that I think were correct based on her principles, and largely her Christian principles, mainly on the topics of foreign policy and the reaction to the war in Gaza being waged by Israel. And Candace's stances, if you haven't heard them, you know, I would say they're very similar to mine, being that we should be grieved anytime anyone innocent dies. And there is nothing about October 7th, as evil as it was, that would justify the death of innocent lives as a response to it. And yes, I know Hamas can sometimes engage in tactics that make it harder to take them out. People like to call this using human shields. But listen, that can happen anywhere. People can take hostages. People can put themselves in situations where they become more difficult to take out because of the worry about casualties and collateral damage. However, I don't see it as commonplace here in America when we're dealing with hostage situations to blow up entire buildings or city blocks or to trap a group of people in a specific area and then cut off their water and gas and electricity and keep food from coming in. So there's a lot of things that are disanalogous when we're talking about this. And when we're talking about morality, you know, something that I think stems from the Christian worldview is that there is one set of moral principles. Murder is murder, theft is theft. And I think you can make a just war theory, but nothing in that just war theory says that once war, you know, has been declared, that we're now operating on a different set of moral principles. I think that the killing of an innocent life is still the killing of an innocent life. And at the very least, we should be equally grieved by that. But Candace has come under fire as basically being anti-Semitic and all sorts of things because of her stances on Israel, because of her stances on the war in Gaza. And this is most likely what led to her departure from The Daily Wire. And to confirm all these suspicions, when Andrew Klavan took to his show, he basically said everything along the same lines. He said that Candace Owens was going around making dog whistles for Nazis and people who hate Jews, although he can't really point to anything specifically that she said. It's just a matter of, and I'm not making this up, there is one tweet she liked that they are all sticking their claim on, even though the tweet in question, which I describe in this segment, I don't know if I'm going to play it in the segment that I clipped out, but in the whole conversation, which you should listen to, I had with Kyle, I talked about this, how Candace on her own show brought up how she liked that tweet, and she didn't even notice that. Like, it was one of those things where someone says something that you agree with, and then on the tail end of the tweet, they included something that you didn't quite catch. And basically, there was a Jewish rabbi who was going around smearing Candace, and he made up this accusation that was clearly a lie because the screenshot he posted had a date in it that didn't match up with the date in question because it was a whole year off. It was like something posted that was supposed to have happened recently, and it was dated March 13th, but the screenshot showed March 20th. And when people looked into it, like, yeah, it was March 20th of like last year. And so without getting into too much specifics, you can research it yourself. And Candace literally describes this on her episode. It was a clear lie. And she liked a tweet that was calling out clear lie. And then notes at the end that like there was a zinger at the end, basically making a insult towards the Jewish person. But why is that what we're staking our hats on if we're trying to call Candace anti-Semitic? It's not like she's on her show repeating anti-Semitic tropes. She's not going around saying Jews drink Christian blood. She's not going around saying that Jews aren't human or that Jews are the source of all evil in the world or anything like that. She does point out the fact that just as the left will play identity politics in places like the Black community and like things like Black Lives Matter, and there are groups like the NAACP that have clearly been weaponized to become, you know, a sort of political arm and lobbying arm for certain demographic communities and wielding law in a way that favors those communities and that is often criticized. I mean, Klavan in his own episode talks about how we can criticize things in different communities, criticize things like Black Lives Matter or groups that are claiming to advocate for those groups but are doing so in a way that's harmful. All Candace has pointed to, and this is true, and I would point to this as well, is that within the broader world of Judaism and Zionism and Israeli politics, and as that reaches out beyond even the state of Israel, there are some who are playing the game of identity politics, but doing so on the behalf of the Jewish people and doing so in a way that I do not think is in accordance with natural law, with libertarian principles, or with biblical principles. Because I think that we should not have special standards. And the clip I'm going to play you here is one where Kyle and I are reacting to Klavan and eventually get to a point where Klavan is essentially invoking special standards and essentially says that the problem is that the Jewish people are just a special people and that when evil is committed against them, it's especially evil. And the reason this is important is because the same question was presented to Candace Owens when she had Rabbi Barclay on her show, one of the critics of Candace. So she's honestly engaging with her critics. And when she had Barclay on, he was pressing her to say, it's not enough to say that what Hamas did is evil. Because what he was saying was that she was justifying Hamas because if she says it's evil and it's not a special evil, then she just doesn't understand anti-Semitism because anti-Semitism is a hate that mutates, you know, which is something that should make you question. You know, people are defining anti-Semitism as, oh, it's a hate that mutates and it comes in different forms and shapes. So it, you know, essentially that means it can be whatever you want it to be. And in this case, it's if you are critical of Israel, the state of Israel, if you're critical of certain strains of Zionism, and if you take the position that, well, Hamas did was evil, but that what's happening on the other side, and even what was happening on the other side that led up to that, right? Because there was policies in Gaza, which led to blowback. The blowback was predictable, but insofar as it was targeted at innocent civilians on the Israeli side, it was wrong and evil, just like as bin Laden's 9/11 terror attacks were wrong and evil. And at the same time, predictable blowback for American interventionism. And the Israeli policy in Gaza leading up to October 7th was such that it put the Palestinian people in a position of being trapped, of being in a state of occupation and a state of very poor living conditions. And it fosters the sort of environment and circumstances which lead to blowback. We can acknowledge that while also saying that it doesn't justify the killing of innocent life. But what's not helping the problem is when the response back is to kill innocent life. Collective punishment is not something that we as Christians are called to do. Furthermore, this is only going to continue the cycle of blowback, as has happened in the past, because all of the tens of thousands of innocent people being killed in Gaza right now, is going to radicalize the terrorists of the next generation. And that's just a fact. This is all Candace has brought up. This is all people like me and Dave Smith and Scott Horton and so many others have been bringing up. And what people like Rabbi Barclay, what people like Klavan are trying to say is that if you are not so emotionally triggered by October 7th, that your reaction needs to be that it was a special, unspeakable evil against the Jewish people. And therefore, because of that special evil, we can't compare October 7th to the response. Because it doesn't matter how many Palestinian children die, it doesn't matter how many Palestinian civilians die, because anything is an acceptable cost to take out Hamas, because what Hamas did was this special brand of evil. If you just say, well, it was evil, and the response can also be evil, because we have a consistent standard of it is wrong to take innocent human life. It is wrong to murder, and it is wrong to collectively punish. Because what Hamas did was saying, we've been persecuted by the Israeli government, so now we're going to kill Israeli people. Well, that's wrong. Just like, listen, there are legitimate grievances where bin Laden said that American foreign policy led to the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians and children in the 90s. That doesn't mean, therefore, that it's morally justified by any consistent moral standard that, oh, you killed our innocent people so we can kill yours. But that is what statism does. That is what collectivism does. And we as Christians should be opposed to that. And Candace Owens, although I don't agree with her on everything, she was right on this issue. And she got taken out for it. I don't think taken out like forever, but she's had consequences for it, for calling out this collectivism, which is something I thought conservatives were against. I thought conservatives and the right wing and the Ben Shapiro's of the world are supposed to be against collectivism. We're supposed to be against identity politics. But it's clear that, no, they just hate the left's collectivism and they hate the left's identity politics. But identity politics on the right, those are okay. So listen to this segment, and if you like what you're hearing, you can go back and listen to the whole episode. But yeah, I think that there's a problem in Klavan's analysis, and I think that it's worthy of listening to, worthy of critique, and something that I am encouraged to call Christians to think through, reflect on, pray on, and ask yourself if you can read the Bible and come away believing that this is acceptable. One more thing I'll plug is that there are some who use Old Testament wars to justify things that are going on here, but I think that is a gross theological error. And there's an episode I did in the past with Gregory Bouse on things like the conquest of Canaan and Old Testament wars, broadly speaking, and explaining why that is not an argument for justifying wars of aggression, wars of conquest, or the killing of innocent life today. So I will have that in the show notes. I also encourage you to listen to that episode if you haven't, because that is an argument that takes a little bit of time to unpack, and I can't do it here. Suffice to say that what was granted and warranted to Old Testament Israel in a specific covenant and a specific place and time was not a prescription of a universal moral standard, but was rather, we call it an eschatological intrusion. It was an exception almost to the natural moral law that stood only for as long as that old covenant stood. The old covenant is no longer in effect because we are under the new covenant that was bought, that was purchased with Jesus Christ's blood and his body. And so we are not under the old covenant. We're not under the old covenant laws. And those laws were only specific to a specific people in a specific time and region. There's nothing about decrees saying to go and wipe out Canaanites, to go and wipe out the specific people living there at that time that you can then draw a straight line to and say, "And okay, so what are we saying? We should wipe out all the Palestinian people?" Again, if those are the conclusions you're coming to based on your reading of the Bible, then I think you need to go back and try again. So that's all I have for this introduction. I hope you enjoy this segment, this conversation between Kyle and I.
So Candace stood by her friend Kanye West when he started spouting crazy stuff about going DEFCON on the Jews. Fine. She has a mentally ill friend. She stood by him. You know, fine. You know, a little uncomfortable, but still, you know, so what? You know, she attacked this guy, Rabbi.
Because I want to pause it right there. If I had more time, I would like play this back to back with clips from Candace's most recent show. But I would just encourage people, if they remember that saga and have any questions about it, Candace did a really good breakdown of this on like her last episode on the Daily Wire, where she explains like, where she's like, listen, I'm not saying Kanye handled this the right way, but here's the context of what he was reacting towards. And there was this Jewish person who was texting him, who was basically saying like, you and I are going to have a sit down and chat, and you're either going to come to, you know, see things my way, or I'm going to have you institutionalized and you're never going to see your kids again. And I was like,
how do you react to that? How are you supposed to react to somebody telling you, and even if they can't do that, like, what is the proper response to somebody telling you, you will never see your kids again? What is the problem? Because I mean, for most people, I hate to say this, but I think violence sometimes may be the proper response to somebody like that. If you're telling me that you are going to isolate me from my family, I mean, that is criminal. If you're telling somebody that and you have intent to do it, then once again, what's the proper response? I'm not saying you should go out and go murder people. I'd never advocate that. But at a certain point, I mean, you could understand somebody's frustration.
Yeah, exactly. I 100% agree with that. Doesn't mean that Kanye was right in everything he said. Does it mean that I'm not trying to endorse Kanye, and neither was Candace, but she was just like, her pitch was always, I think Kanye shapes culture, and shaping culture is important, and we should try to, you know, surround him with people with good ideas and get him on a good path rather than ostracizing him and wasting his potential, which, you know, like, I don't think she was wrong to try to pursue that or to try to contextualize the things that were causing him to react this way. And I think, you know, it's easy, like, forget just Kanye. There are some people who go too far down the what people call like the JQ rabbit hole.
Absolutely. And
you can, if you're willing to just be objective, you can understand how people fall down that rabbit hole. Because there are, just as this guy who was texting Kanye, there are powerful people who will try to wield their power and influence in the interest of sort of this like Zionist Jewish, collective special interest, you know, hive that exists. And it's as I kind of described earlier, it's this weird amalgamation of different groups. And if you even like, as Candace has found out, if you sort of even just begin to poke that with a stick, they come after you, and they will come after you hard, and they will make threats of ruining your career, of separating you from your family, institutionalizing you. I mean, all sorts of stuff. And some people react to that, and they don't, as you and I have kind of explained, chalk that up to, well, this exists everywhere. There are, you know, within groups, good and bad people, and you know, kind of just taking that response. Some people kind of then go down the full, like, you know, oh wow, so, you know, Jews run the world, and, you know, all the anyone who spent any time on the internet knows all the dark corners of the internet and all the Jewish conspiracy theories and things like that. It's like, I don't go there, but I understand how some people, when they see some of this stuff happening, and I think this is kind of what happened to Kanye. He felt, he didn't just see it. He experienced this, and then it pushed him into the hands of some other people who were going down those rabbit holes. And I think he kind of followed them there for a little bit. And Candace was just kind of like, you know, wasn't willing to, like, she didn't want to just like turn on her friend and just start attacking him like anyone else. And I've had this conversation with so many people, mostly because of like dealing with critics of mine within the libertarian sphere, like the Thakertarians and whatnot, where, you know, there, some people respond to people who become overt racists or overt, like, you know, alt-right types. And they're like, well, we need to just publicly shame them as Nazis and racists and like xenophobic or whatever, and like, you know, ostracize them from society. I'm like, I've always said that's the wrong way to handle that. Like, that just gets them only talking to other people who think like them. They go further down these conspiracy holes and, you know, end up possessed by these, you know, it's like, you know, they end up in like ideological capture because they've been shunned by everyone else. Whereas like, I prefer like the Daryl Davis approach, which is like, no, just talk with these people and acknowledge where they're right, show them where they have gone a little, you know, like, listen, you're responding to collectivism, and now you're responding to that collectivism with more collectivism, and that's not the solution in either case.
Right. Well, it's in people's nature to dig their heels in when they're attacked.
Yes.
So, you know, like you said, the Daryl Davis path, let's have a conversation and let's, you know, understand where they're coming from and try to build a dialogue and maybe see if I can pull them back from, you know, the edge of unreasonable insanity or, you know, bring them back to sanity and kind of see things through a little bit more of a nuanced perspective. Because if you're only talking to people who think like you and you're in a very, very dark place of, you know, collectivism and, you know, this one particular group, and this doesn't have to be just about Jews, it could be anybody. You know, this particular group is responsible for all the world ill, or you know, all the worldly ills and all the problems that I'm facing. Once again, you shouldn't want to push that person further into that corner. You should want to bring them out. You should want to be, you know, maybe a light at the end of the tunnel saying, like, I understand why you're frustrated, but let's kind of pull you back into the real world where we can get you living in a way that's a little bit more conducive to having like a good and healthy life where you can socialize, not think that everybody of a certain group or just everybody in general is out to get you. Like that's like schizophrenia and paranoia. That's not healthy.
And this doesn't just exist on the right. Like I would say what you see with Black Lives Matter, what you see with the most extreme anti-white hatred and rhetoric on the left.
The Transformer stuff too.
Yeah, yeah. Is really just the same thing in reverse from the other side. But that's more socially acceptable for some reason. Like, I don't know why. Mm-hmm. It's just in our culture. It's like, oh, if you think whites run the world and if you think whites are sort of the root of all evil and all problems, it's all just white Western colonialism. It's the boogeyman that answers everything, every inequality, every injustice is caused by white Christians and white colonialism and white men. That's fine. Like, I'm not trying to say that the Jewish stuff or the, you know, the racist stuff on the right is right or correct. I just find it funny that stuff is considered evil while the stuff on the left is just, even by like people in the middle or like on the center left or center right will go, well, they're just wrong and misguided.
Right.
Like, well, wait, why, like either they're both evil or they're both just wrong and misguided or some combination. Like what's the special pleading here that says one is, you know, and so this is actually, I'll play more of Klavan here because this is, Klavan is going to do the same thing. He's going to say that when it comes to the Jews, it is literally just a special kind of evil. So don't take my word for it. We'll hear it out of the horse's mouth.
Rabbi Shmuley, I will tell you, with all honesty, I don't even know who Rabbi Shmuley is. I have no idea. I didn't look him up. I haven't seen anything from him. You know, she's complaining about him. Fine. You don't like a rabbi? You're allowed not to like. You're allowed not to like Ben. You're allowed not to like anybody you don't like if you can spell it out for me what the problem is. But when you start saying things like some of those books Hitler burned were so bad, you know, I was shocked. This is something Candace actually said. I was surprised to learn that the books Hitler was burning or the Nazis were burning, they weren't good books. They were bad books. They were socialist books. So,
is that wrong? I mean, like, I mean, yeah, you can kind of just like say something and laugh it off, but like, I mean, listen, the Nazis made companies that exist today. The Nazis had scientists that went on to continue scientific developments that we use today, right? Like,
yeah, it makes people uncomfortable to think that the people that you think are the most evil, vile people in the world may have some legitimate grievances. But see, this is the thing. This is how the worst ideologies and the worst movements kind of form, is that they need that grain of truth. This is how all the wars get started. There always has to be a grain of truth because they can't sell it on 100% a lie. There has to be some, you know, at least plausible deniability or some kind of grain of truth in there to sell it, because otherwise people won't trust it at all. So this is what people do, is that they'll take that little grain of truth and they'll extrapolate it, you know, 50 points down the way so that they could sell you on what their agenda is. And this is, once again, why you kind of have to give the devil its due in all regards, because you should understand why, you know, what you're opposed to, you know, whatever your goal is, you should understand why, you know, if you're competing with something, what their goal is, so that way you can properly fight it.
Yeah. And, you know, he's not going to bring this up here. There's another quote people have gone after Candace for. So that Rabbi Shmuley that he cited said that, Rabbi Barclay mm-hmm. wrote an article where she said that Candace said Hitler was okay. When really what she said was, if Hitler was just, because she was being asked a question about nationalism and if she was pro or anti-nationalism. And she said, well, I think nationalism gets this bad connotation because of Hitler. And she's like, listen, like, you know, in terms of like, if I'm going to be a globalist or a nationalist, I'd rather be a nationalist. And if Hitler was just trying to be a nationalist and trying to make Germany great again and like build walls to protect themselves and focus on their infrastructure and making their people wealthier and happier, then no one would have had an issue with him. It's when he decided to expand and attack others and slaughter a bunch of innocent people is where, you know, that's the evil part. And so nationalism wasn't the evil part. It was the expansionist evil, you know, murdering machine. And we need to separate those two, which I think is 100% correct. Like, I guess nationalism can lead towards collectivism, which can cause you to other groups and justify killing them. But it's not like self-evident that nationalism 100% lends itself towards that, or at the very least that if you're doing a trade-off comparison of nationalism versus globalism, that, you know, someone can't come away going, yeah, nationalism's a better trend than globalism, which, if maybe she's wrong, but like, okay, whatever. Does that mean she clearly didn't say Hitler was okay? And this is getting to the point we're talking about, which is like, we can look at people who were objectively, you know, like, evil, who have done evil things, but then be like, okay, like that doesn't mean, like, you know, evil people can sometimes do things that are either correct or even might, you know, in isolation say like, well, that was a, you know, a good thing to do, or a reasonable thing to do, or at least like, you know, something like, again, like there are insofar as Hitler criticized socialism. Like, just because Hitler said socialism is bad doesn't mean socialism is good, right? It's just that kind of like, you know, yeah, and maybe it makes people uncomfortable, but it's like, I don't know. Like, I mean, if we're going to go that route, then no one should be vegan or vegetarian because Hitler was, right? So it's like, right. You know, but like, how insane are we going to go? Like, you can really reduct you ad absurdum that to basically be like, so when Candace says, listen, like, people want to talk about how the Nazis were burning, because this was in response to conservatives trying to censor certain books in public schools and things like that. And say like, you know, and people are like, oh, you're getting rid of books. You know who also got rid of books? The Nazis. And I think Candace was trying to say, you know what, like, if you're just getting rid of bad books, at least from like public areas, maybe especially around kids. And listen, like, maybe, you know, the books that the Nazis burned weren't like, they weren't burning every book alive. They were, some of the books they were burning were like objectively bad books. Like maybe like, you know, books promoting socialism and what, and maybe you're even saying you shouldn't burn them or whatever. But like, for him to be taking this point and be like, oh, clearly that means she's dog whistle. I don't think I played that part yet. I think he's going to call it a dog whistle here in a second. Let me play it.
So, you know, that's true. Burning a book is the act of a savage, first of all. And when you start with burning books, you start burning people. But they burned Joseph Conrad, one of my favorite writers, Kafka, Hemingway, Jack London, and yes, some socialists, some of whom were extremely talented and some of whom were extremely interesting, like Karl Marx is an extremely interesting writer with whom I deeply, deeply disagree, but I don't burn his books because I'm not a savage. When you start saying that, you're saying that's a dog whistle. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So right there.
There it is.
Yep. So again, it's like, oh, if you're saying that, and what's so crazy to me is that he's suddenly making the left's argument.
Yes. And this is exactly what the right has done over the last couple of months. I mean, it's amazing to watch how literally they sound like Democrats talking about black people when you talk about the Jewish people. And like, I'm not saying that there aren't legitimate grievances and there isn't legit anti-Semitism where people hate Jews and blame them for everything bad in the world. But when you start saying this is a dog whistle, like, you sound like MSNBC every single time they talked about Trump, and they left out the context of him when he talked about Charlottesville and said, there are good people on both sides, but I'm not referring to the white nationalists who should be condemned totally. That was like his exact quote. They're saying like, that's a dog whistle. Like you sound like a big woke, you know, liberal crybaby.
Yeah, exactly. And again, like maybe you could criticize Candace Owens as maybe like saying maybe the argument she's trying to make is wrong, whatever. But right. then be like, oh, she is saying this because she's trying the dog whistle to Nazis and people who hate Jews. Just again, like that is bending over backwards in the same way the left does to play these dumb identity politics games. And it just drives me crazy. Let's see what he says next. I don't quite remember.
Sorry, I know it's a leftist phrase. I know they use it, you know, randomly with anything you say. I understand all of that. Still, the depredations of the Nazis.
No argument. Just like, you know, the left does this too, but like,
they're right. They're right. Yeah. You know what? No. He's pretty much saying, yeah, you know what? I know they say dog whistles, but we got to use it here because, you know, this time we're right. You know, the left, they're crazy. But, you know, we're the smart guys. And this is the problem when, you know, smarter people can be easier to trick because we'll buy our own bullshit all day.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, he'll gladly convince himself that he's right. He won't possibly consider, you know, am I being irrational? No, I would never be irrational. Well, the fact is there's plenty of people, ourselves included, there's probably something that we're just 100% wrong on. And we've completely convinced ourselves that we're right about it.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Against the Jews are one of the most well-documented, recorded atrocities in human history. Because
yes. Candace has never denied the Holocaust or tried to minimize the Holocaust, although it's worth noting that there is no official consensus on the exact numbers of the Holocaust because you have legitimate scholarly estimates that go as low as 2 to 3 million Jews killed in the Holocaust, and then some that go as high as 10 million. And 6 million is the number people settle on because it's like part of some Jewish prophecy, I think, or something like that. So it's like, but the point is, you can't go and find, like, if these clips existed, they would be used, right? Like, Barclay and Rabbi Shmuley would be finding the clips where Candace goes, yeah, did the Holocaust really happen? I mean, could this many concentration camps kill this many people over this? Like, none of that. No, it's, well, I don't know, like, you know, Hitler was burning books of socialists because he hated socialists, and okay, so like, and that means that the Holocaust didn't happen. I'm not understanding. Like, this is like a step one, step two blank, step three profit. Like, there's a big disconnect in the middle of this argument here. He just basically brought up something to make people feel morally, you know, icky, and then he'd be like, "See, you feel icky. That's because Candace Owen really hates Jews and doesn't think the Holocaust happened."
Well, and this is what a lot of people will do is that they'll do, you know, go fact, my opinion. And what their opinion's meant to do is make you feel a certain way or convince you of their argument. So, okay, Andrew Klavan, if Candace legitimately denied the Holocaust, show the proof that she did that, and then show your proof that, you know, however many Jewish people died in the Holocaust. I don't know. I haven't researched the topic. I believe that millions of people were killed in the Holocaust. I don't know how many because that's outside of the scope of my work. But once again, if you were here to present that argument, then show where she did that. Prove that she said that and walk through why she's wrong. If you can't do that, then you're just trying to get people worked up. You're trying to make people emotional to support your argument, which is just complete and total bullcrap.
Yeah. All right, let's keep going here.
They're Germans. They keep records. They keep very good records. We know these things happen. They weren't burning books. You know, they also hated Einstein because his science was Jewish science. They hated Mendelssohn, one of their great composers, because his music was Jewish music. That's the way they thought. It's lunacy. It's lunacy to think that way. So when you start to say, well, you know, some of those books they burned are, you know, were bad books. I'm sorry. That's a dog whistle. When you...
Again, not an argument. It's just an assertion. It's just like, icky. You know, they hated Jews. Mm. So if you think that any of the books that they burned might have been bad books, and I think Candace's point was just that, like, I'd have to go back and find the original context she brought this up in. She was not saying we should burn. I think she was just kind of making a side point. She's like, they're comparing us to Nazis for removing books from people. And she's like, just by the way, like, the Nazis didn't just, like, burn every book in existence. Like, we hate books. Like, they were burning books that they considered bad. And some of these books were objectively bad. Just in the way, like, that shouldn't be, like, controversial
like any more than saying like, you know, the Nazis invented Volkswagen and Volkswagens are cars that people still like to enjoy and drive today, even despite how you and I might hate working on them as auto mechanics.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so Len, you know, my follow-up question to him saying this though, how he said people who burn books are savages. Would you say the same thing if you saw somebody outside burning a copy of Mein Kampf? Would you feel the exact same way? Probably not. And look, that's okay. If someone bought a book and they wanted to burn it, all right. Like it's your property. You can do with it as you please. If you're dumb enough to buy a book and then burn it, that's on you, man. You're not a savage for that. And then once again, if she said that like these were bad books, why is she wrong? If they weren't bad books, okay, once again, make your argument. Why weren't they bad books? If she's just saying, you know, they burned bad books, you know, some of the stuff, the reason why Hitler was able to rise to power is because of some of the degeneracy and the rampant inflation back in the day. Now, obviously his solutions were beyond the pale, but like somebody like that doesn't get into power just because, you know, one day for no reason, right? Like there were things that led up to this that people felt disenfranchised and felt that they needed somebody to come back and take, you know, authority. It, like I said, it wasn't just, you know, one day for no reason at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Retweet a post saying a Jew is drunk on Christian blood, which goes back, as I'm sure you know, to old blood libel.
All right. Again, if I had more time, I'd go and I do want to show my work, but at the same time, Candace already showed her own work here, so I'll just, you know, cite people to go watch her last episode of The Daily Wire where she tackles this head on. All right, well, that concludes today's episode. Again, if you liked what you heard there, I'll have links for you to listen to the entire original live stream, either on YouTube or to listen to the entire live stream in an audio version on the LCI Green Room feed, which you should subscribe to if you haven't already. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you again next week. Live for Christ.
The Biblical Anarchy Podcast is a part of the Christians for Liberty Network, a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute. If you love this podcast, it helps us reach more with a message of freedom when you rate and review us on your favorite podcast apps and share with others. If you want to support the production of the Biblical Anarchy Podcast, please consider donating to the Libertarian Christian Institute at biblicalanarchypodcast.com, where you can also sign up to receive special announcements and resources related to biblical anarchy. Thanks for tuning in.